Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. I appreciate you tuning in for this Monday edition. Lots of local news to catch you up on, and we begin with some breaking news, actually, that is nationally relevant. U.S. officials arrested and charged a former Chapel Hill businessman with assaulting a U.S. Capitol Police officer who died earlier this year. Julian Cater is one of two people arrested in connection with assaulting Brian Sicknick, a police officer who later died from injuries sustained at the insurrection event at the Capitol building on January 6th by extremists supporting President Donald Trump. Cater co-owned the Fruita Bowl restaurant in Chapel Hill for a couple of years before moving to Pennsylvania. The Associated Press reports Cater and George Tanios of West Virginia were scheduled to appear in court on the charges Monday, and Sicknick died from injuries. They are not sure whether Cater and Tanios' actions were the causation of Sicknick's death, but a lot of investigation still ongoing in that. And these pair are some of the first people to be arrested and charged in connection to people who died during that January 6th event. We are working on getting more information and have a story up on chapelboro.com with details on that investigation and details on Cater's actions during that insurrection event. Turning now to state news, we got an update on the COVID-19 data from the state government that showed North Carolina hit an encouraging benchmark over the weekend. COVID-19 hospitalizations have been a key data point in determining the state's trajectory in effectively preventing the virus's spread and how many resources are available to treat people. After months of being elevated, the downward trend has now dipped below 1,000 people hospitalized in North Carolina due to COVID-19. The state also reported a day of less than 1,000 new positive cases over the weekend, which hasn't happened in a long time. Health officials have largely been crediting these trends to adherence of public health guidelines, but also the rise in vaccination efforts. That work continues this week as groups 1, 2, and 3 will make appointments, and those in group 4 with chronic health conditions become eligible beginning on Wednesday. State leaders announced these changes last week, with group 4 crediting a steady supply of vaccine doses from the federal government, which has set May 1st as their target date to open eligibility to everyone in the country for vaccine signups. Now, just because more people are now eligible to get the COVID-19 vaccine doesn't mean that everybody wants it. Recent surveys conducted by North Carolina Central University show roughly 45% of adults are hesitant about getting one. Carolina Connections' Daniel Myrick has more on why this is.
Essential frontline workers in North Carolina are now eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. As a part-time worker at a grocery store in Robbins, Noah Johnson can make an appointment to get the vaccine. However, Johnson, who is a junior at UNC, is skeptical about the vaccine and has decided that he isn't willing to take the risk.
I'm kind of weary of how quickly it was created. I know that kind of sounds cliched, but you think of it, a virus that would cause such a pandemic is suddenly solved within a year.
Johnson describes himself as a healthy person, but he is worried that he might get sicker from the vaccine than the actual virus itself.
See all these infomercials on TV where you got this medicine or whatever, this pill or vaccination that's supposed to like cure one thing, but then it brings, then the guy at the end talks about million miles an hour telling you all the side effects of it. And you wonder, is it really worth it?
Johnson isn't alone in being skeptical about the vaccine, as there's also a lot of hesitancy amongst minorities. NC Central held a panel discussion about the COVID-19 vaccine and communities of color.
So our preliminary findings thus far are that there are trust issues with the vaccine.
That was Saronda Robinson, a professor of public health education and epidemiology at NC Central. She mentioned the Tuskegee syphilis experiment as one of many reasons why minorities aren't comfortable taking the vaccine.
You see, the main reason were concerns about the safety of the vaccine. Some people feel that the vaccines were developed too quickly. There's also mistrust of the government and distrust in the medical system.
Dr. Abhi Mehrotra, Assistant Medical Director of Emergency Medicine in Chapel Hill, explained why people should have faith in the science behind the cure.
The technology that the first two vaccines use, the Pfizer and the Moderna, has been in development for a long period of time. And that's why the vaccines were able to be developed so quickly.
Dr. Mehrotra also said that because there were so many cases of COVID in such a short period of time, that also accelerated the time needed for testing. But what about side effects?
As with any kind of medication or vaccine, there will be side effects. The most common ones we're seeing with the COVID vaccinations are local pain at the injection site, some redness, maybe some swelling. Some folks get muscle aches and fatigue, just feeling tired.
Dr. Mehrotra said that these side effects are mild compared to the actual disease and that it is not worth risking being on a ventilator or having long-term neurological damage from COVID. He even had a message for those that are worried about the vaccine.
Tell folks that the vaccine's very safe. I've gotten the vaccine, all my colleagues have as well, so that we can better care for patients with less risk to ourselves. And from a safety perspective, it has been thoroughly tested and therefore received the emergency approval for use. And so I have faith in it.
So for people like Noah Johnson,
I want to see, you know, how everything pans out.
Or anyone else who is hesitant about taking the vaccine, this vaccine was released with unprecedented speed. However, the data provided by Dr. Mehrotra and Robinson show that the vaccine is not dangerous and that any potential side effects far outweigh the risk of catching COVID. In Chapel Hill, I'm Daniel Meyer.
You can hear more Carolina Connection stories Saturday mornings throughout this spring semester right here on 97.9 The Hill. It is important to note that with those vaccine efforts, our region still does have a ways to go before everything is safe from the COVID-19 virus. We're seeing at Duke University right now students sheltering in place in their dorm rooms as the school attempts to curb a recent spread of COVID-19 within its campus community. Duke reports more than 180 positive cases in this recent rash, with 200 more people in quarantine. So all undergraduate students have been told to stay in place until Sunday morning. Turning to Orange County, former Carrboro Fire Chief Susanna Schmidt-Williams recently fired a lawsuit against the town government. In an Associated Press report, Williams said she faced several instances of sexual harassment during her time as the first woman fire chief in the state. The lawsuit alleges Carrboro town staff, including town manager David Andrews, overturned Williams' decision-making in punishing those who had harassed her, and as well as not taking seriously other complaints that she filed. She told the Associated Press the incidents led her to contemplate suicide before her firing in 2019. You can read more about that report on chapelboro.com. And in the northern part of the county, some shocking news from this morning as a tractor trailer wrecked on Interstate 85 near the Orange Grove Road overpass. The Orange County Sheriff's Office said the truck rolled over the south side of the median and caused delays throughout the early part of the day. Thankfully, the driver was largely unharmed, according to the sheriff's office, and the debris has since been cleared. But you can see some pretty remarkable photos of the wreckage by going to Chapelboro as well. It is time now for a look at sports, and the Tar Heels men's basketball team found out their NCAA tournament fate Sunday night. Carolina drew an 8 seed in the South region, meaning they are slated to match up with number 9 Wisconsin on Friday. We're going to have that game right here for you on 97.9 The Hill. Coverage is going to start at 5:30 ahead of a tip-off at 7:10. The winner of that UNC-Wisconsin game will go on to play the winner of number 1 Baylor and number 16 Hartford. Six other ACC teams also made it into the big dance as announced on Sunday. Virginia, Florida State both earned 4 seeds. Clemson is a 7 seed. ACC champion Georgia Tech a 9 seed. Virginia Tech a 10 seed. And Syracuse squeaked in as an 11 seed. The selection committee for the NCAA also have said Louisville is the top choice available to replace any team unable to travel to Indianapolis for coronavirus reasons. So there might be a chance they could make it in as well. Meanwhile, the UNC women's basketball program is waiting to see where they will end up in their own tournament. The NCAA has Courtney Banghart's Tar Heels at 35 in their net ranking, so the team is likely to be right on the bubble or in the lower seeds. The selection show is set for 7 p.m. tonight on ESPN, and they will reveal the field that will be competing in San Antonio in just a few days. The Atlantic Coast Conference also announced today they are eliminating their rule requiring athletes to sit out a season if they transfer with in the conference. The move is just the latest across college sports to loosen restrictions on transferring athletes so they can switch schools and play right away. Elsewhere in Carolina athletics, it was a very busy weekend. Baseball swept Clemson in a three-game series, capped off with a 5-3 win on Sunday. And with that dominant performance, Carolina baseball moves up to number 14 in Baseball of America's weekly poll. Clemente Inclán of the Diamond Heels was also named ACC Player of the Week earlier today. UNC softball split four games they played with Notre Dame over the weekend. They won 2-1 on Sunday. Women's lacrosse absolutely destroyed Virginia Tech on Saturday, 22-1. The women's tennis programs also cruised in their matches against Clemson and Georgia Tech. They only dropped one game over the entire weekend. Karen Shelton's field hockey team continued their good form with a 2-0 win over Wake Forest. 2-0 also the final score in the men's soccer game over Virginia. And gymnastics, Carolina Gymnastics defeated William & Mary in a home meet. Turning back to some local news here, on March 13th, 2020, three plainclothes police officers shot into the apartment of Breonna Taylor and killed the 26-year-old healthcare worker. While her story did not gain national attention until the death of George Floyd, crowds shouted her name and demanded justice throughout this past summer, including in our community. On Saturday, which was the one-year anniversary of Taylor's tragic death, the Chapel Hill Carborough branch of the NAACP held a vigil in her honor to continue speaking out against racial injustice and to recognize the work of Black women like Taylor.
Say her name!
Breonna Taylor!
Say her name!
Breonna Taylor!
Say her name.
Organized by the Chapel Hill Carborough NAACP's Youth Council, Saturday's event saw community members and elected officials gather at the Peace and Justice Plaza on Franklin Street. As people remembered Breonna Taylor's story and her death, people shared stories of how important Black women are to American society, while highlighting how systemic racism often devalues their roles. Nia Farrington helped organize the event for the Youth Council. She said as a nursing student, essential worker, and Black woman, she thinks of Taylor every day. She said as the anniversary of Taylor's death approached, she felt compelled to do something to honor her life and continue to celebrate the efforts of the local Black community.
I feel like she deserves so much more from her community, from communities all over. So that just drives me even more to make sure that people are continuously knowing her story and don't forget who she is.
Farrington was also involved with organizing rallies in downtown Chapel Hill this past summer in the middle of the international outcry following George Floyd and Taylor's deaths. She said while she was thankful for the community support on Saturday, the diminished numbers compared to those events showed how important it is to keep stories like Taylor's at the front of the public eye.
When we were out here this summer, the streets were full. We had thousands of people participating. But that just goes to show you that if it's not on people's minds or constantly being exposed to them, they're not thinking about it. But the reality for the Black person is every day they're thinking about this. So if you really want to be an ally and support people in this community, talk to town council. Be a voice for people when we can't be there or in spaces where we need power and people and number to really get our voices heard.
In addition to sharing stories, Saturday's gathering included musical performances, a candlelit moment of silence, and comments from community leaders, including Chair of the Orange County Commissioners, Renee Price. Price commended the Youth Council for organizing the vigil and pledged her support for their efforts against racial injustice.
I am so proud of this younger generation for accepting their calling and bringing the demand for justice to the streets, our streets. Please know that I stand with you as an elected official and as a Black woman. I stand with you. And I know that the elected officials that are here today also stand with you.
President of the NAACP chapter, Donna Jones, also said she was amazed by the Youth Council's action to put together Saturday's vigil and to bring attention to Taylor's death. She also said the inclusions of messaging to promote the work of Black women is a key element to earn the community more recognition, since Jones says she believes they hold up, quote, the entire world.
We are doing the work, whether it's in the office, in the church, in the school districts. We are elected officials. We are serving on the ground at every turn. And it is important to celebrate and hold each other up for that. But it's also important for people to recognize how much unpaid labor Black women are doing to keep us on track so that we don't go back 400 years.
We've got some news out of the State General Assembly. While the spotlight has largely shined on COVID-19 relief and education bills in recent days, a lot of other controversial and bipartisan pieces of legislature are also currently under consideration. 97.9 The Hill's Aaron Keck recently spoke with State House Representative and Orange County Representative Greg Meyer about what North Carolinians should watch for in the coming weeks out of the General Assembly.
Well, this week in the House, we had several controversial gun bills and a controversial immigration bill. So clearly the Republicans want to keep their foot on the accelerator on some of the more controversial issues that they like to push. And it's worth watching what happens with those. If they make it to the governor's desk and they get vetoed, I think we likely could sustain a veto on most of those bills. But there's also some interesting bipartisan legislation coming out that I think is worth paying attention to. Representative Marsha Morey from Durham filed a bill this week that would raise the age of juvenile court jurisdiction from 6 to 10. That's in response to a high-profile story about a 6-year-old who was charged in juvenile court for picking a tulip out of the front yard of a neighbor near near his bus stop awaiting to go to school. Seriously.
Not my prize tulips.
Right. We're the only state in the country that has kids as young as 6 years old in juvenile court. So that would be a good change and something where there's some bipartisan effort. There's a bipartisan bill filed today to try and expand the scope of practice for nurses and try and help fill some of the healthcare shortages around the state by allowing nurses to do a little bit more of healthcare practice here in North Carolina. And I think there's going to be some bipartisan work coming up on broadband and a few more education topics related to making up for the learning loss that kids have. So there's going to be some good things this legislative session. We're still going to have our fights, as I pointed out, with those bad bills, but we've got some stuff that we're working on together.
Once again, Orange County Representative, District 50 Representative in the State House, Greg Meyer speaking there. You can hear his full conversation with Aaron Keck by going to the This Morning with Aaron Keck section of chapelboro.com. And on those bills, speaking of those bills, the House and Senate are now reconvened with their sessions. They begin at 4 o'clock and they're discussing many things, but some of those bills certainly included. Some other news out of the state today, North Carolina's unemployment rate fell below 6% during January. That's according to the Commerce Department earlier today. January's rate of 5.9% is slightly better than the 6.1% unemployment rate we saw for December. The department also reported, though, that those jobless figures remain well above those recorded before the COVID-19 pandemic began and obviously hit hard on commerce and businesses. The state says that the unemployment rate peaked during the pandemic at 13.5% last April and May. Those numbers have been adjusted and were higher than initially estimated and reported after some annual corrections and deeper looks into data, according to the State Commerce Department. Employed workers in the state labor force, however, increased by close to 10,000 in January. So one silver lining there. And as I said, this also a silver lining is that the unemployment rate did fall and it is now below 6%, but still elevated compared to pre-COVID times, which is not too surprising.